Yes, it's that time of the week again, and we are joined by Dr. Kimberly Earle. Good afternoon.
Hello, how are you?
I'm great, thank you. How are you?
We're doing really well.
Excellent. What are we talking about today? We've got no Cheryl, so...
Yep, so, well, hopefully we get lots of phone calls, but other than that, I thought we might talk about lumps and bumps on your pets.
Lumps and bumps. That sounds good. If you've got a question for Dr. Kimberly Earle, you can give us a call on 49216216. You'll also go into the draw to win a $50 pet food voucher. Got Vanessa from Mayfield on the line. Hi, Vanessa.
Hello.
Now, you've got a whippet that has a lump near the near its neck?
Yes.
So tell me a little bit about it. What? When did you first notice the lump?
I think last night my daughter pointed it out to me.
Okay. And is it something, like, is this a dog that you would pat frequently? I mean, whippets have pretty short coats, so usually if there's something there, you're going to, you know, see it pretty quickly.
Yeah, I just haven't noticed it, but she pointed it out last night. It's about, she's had a couple of little tiny lumps that have gone away, but this one is about maybe like 5 centimeters.
Okay. Oh, 5 centimeters. Okay. That's quite large.
Not 5 centimeters. I meant like a
5 centimeters. 5 centimeters. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, the things that we want to think about when we find a lump on our dog, okay, or our cat, is whether or not we can think of, okay, well, I washed the dog last week. It definitely wasn't there last week. Sometimes just because, you know, a dog might have a preference for lying on one side versus the other, and then all of a sudden you find a lump on the side where there usually is the downside. So that can happen, and sometimes we won't notice that it's there. But I would always try to think of, when do you think the last time was that you could be certain that it wasn't there, and you may or may not be able to come up with a fixed date for that. The things that make us concerned are if they're ulcerated, so if we've, you know, got hair loss, or if there's any scabbing or oozing moisture around it, whether or not the dog is painful, whether the mass is what we call fixed or mobile, so whether they move in the skin or not, and whether or not the dog's ever had any other, you know, previous histories of other lumps or masses that have come up that your vet may have pointed out, you know, that might be bad. I think if a mass is, you know, relatively, it's not bothering the dog, it's relatively well, you know, subscribed, like you can sort of feel around the edges of it, and it's fairly mobile in the skin, sometimes just sitting and watching it for 24, 48 hours isn't a bad idea. But, you know, most of the time, if it's a mass that has come up rapidly, or that we don't know how long it's been there for, we think it's come up rapidly, they're worthwhile getting checked out by your local veterinarian. And what your vet will do, it will be to stick a little needle into it, sometimes with a syringe barrel on the end of the needle. I like to do my fine needle aspirates just with a needle, and we'll poke it in and out of that little lump fairly rapidly, and then we spray the cells with a syringe. You sort of fill a syringe with air, and we spray it out onto a microscope slide, and we have a look at it underneath the microscope, and it can give us an indication of what kind of cells make up that lump. And that can sometimes direct us to whether or not this is a lump that is of concern, or whether it's something that's just benign. And it could be something like a just a little accumulation of fat cells. It could be a cyst of the hair follicle. So sometimes we'll just get waxy, sort of sebaceous glandular material out of them. But other times we'll find things like mast cells or plasma cells or other round cells, which would indicate that we could have a tumor type, you know, there that warrants surgical excision or biopsy, something like that. So, you know, I think if you've just noticed it, it's probably not an emergency, like a life-threatening emergency, but I would watch it for a day or two. And if it's not going away, or if at any point it's bothering your dog, I would get them into their local vet and let them have a look at it.
Yeah, okay. If it is like a cyst, what happens? Do they just... You just leave them, or what do you do?
It really depends on the individual dog and the individual cyst. So a lot of follicular cysts will come up. They form these little glandular pockets, and they'll sit there very static and do not very much for, you know, a long time. But they can get into a bit of a cycle where they fill up with that sort of waxy material, and then they rupture out through the skin, and you get this sort of scabby, oily, greasy sort of detritus on the surface of the skin. And then they'll sometimes heal back over, wait, you know, it might take a few weeks or a couple months for them to fill back up again, and then they re-rupture and you end up with this stuff on the skin. And if it's just one and they're relatively small and the dog's not licking at it where they can make an infection in the skin, it may not be a drama, but sometimes they become really like quite a nasty nursing, you know, hassle, like you're constantly cleaning up this mucky stuff. And so those ones we will often take away just because they're hard to manage. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you.
Good luck with your little dog.
Thanks. Okay.
Thanks, Vanessa. Now, we're talking about lumps and bumps. What about hernias?
Yeah, so we'll sometimes see lumps and bumps that come up that are actually hernias. Now, a hernia is basically where a bit of tissue comes through another bit of tissue or the muscle, often a muscle. We'll see perianal hernias, so they come up usually on one side of the tail or another, and they're often a little bit soft and sort of squishy. They actually are really important that we, you know, get them looked at. They can lead to some pretty significant problems with animals voiding. They can get bigger through pressure. So I guess if your dog is straining to go to the toilet, that can actually push more of the intestinal contents sort of through, and they can get trapped there, which is really important. Or it's really, really dangerous, I should say. We get lots of little dogs that get umbilical hernias. So where the umbilicus closes, so they have a little umbilical cord, and where that closes, that's like a little separation in the abdominal musculature. And if a little bit of fat gets trapped through there or a little bit of tissue is trapped and that hole doesn't actually get to close after the umbilicus is dried and healed, then sometimes we'll get a bits of tissue that will sort of come through there. And vets will usually check at a new puppy or new kitten consult for an umbilical hernia because they'll often need repairing, you know, during desexing surgeries, those sorts of things. If they're really little, they're very unlikely to cause a problem. And if they're very, very big, they're unlikely to cause a problem. The ones that are really dangerous are the ones that are sort of about the size of a finger, where you can sort of slip a finger just up inside a little bit. And that's because a loop of intestine is much the same size as your finger. And if that loop of intestine falls down through that hole and then gets twisted off with a bit of gas, or, you know, the intestines are quite mobile, they move around, then we can get an entrapment and that can become a life-threatening emergency. So that's a kind of hernia that people are often, you know, looking for, or vets certainly are often looking for. And then the other sorts of lumps that we will sometimes see, people will often call and say, my dog has a lump on its ear. And those are oral hematomas. And that's where actually the ear fills up with blood. The flap of the ear gets a bleed inside it. So the ear flap is basically a sheet of cartilage with a layer of skin on either side of it. And there's some blood vessels that are sandwiched in between there. And dogs who shake their head a lot will occasionally rupture some of those blood vessels, and that ear pinna will then fill up with blood, and you get this big round mass of, you know, the ear swells and it's hot and hard and painful for the dog. It's quite heavy. And that is usually secondary to an ear infection, but not only. We see them sometimes when dogs are playing hard or puppies, you know, biting up at an older dog's ear, things like that. Mm-hmm. And that kind of a lump requires drainage and sometimes surgery to resolve it so that the dog is more comfortable and they don't get a deformity of the ear as that is resolving on its own. So, yeah, lots of different lumps and bumps. Mm. So my rule of thumb is that if you have a lump and you don't know what it is, take your dog up to their vet or your cat up to their vet or your rabbit or bird, because we see lots of lumps on rabbits and birds as well. Take them in and have a vet have a look at it, and they can give you some peace of mind or some advice about how to manage it.
Well, good advice. And on the line to get some more advice is Amy from Maitland. Hi, Amy.
Hello.
Hi, what can we do for you?
Thank you. Yeah, I just wanted to check in. I've got a dog. She's about 9 and she was a rescue, but she's been on Apoquel for since we got her, and then I did switch over to Cytopoint injection.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And then she lost some hair recently just on her back, like a bit of a chunk as well as like a strip of hair. You would think she might have gone under a fence, but she
right.
didn't.
Yep, okay.
So we've also gone back onto the Apoquel just because the needles didn't, like, only seem to last about 3-4 weeks.
Yes.
But I just thought I'd check in. Do you think the hair loss is something that's normal? She's about 10 now.
Mm.
Or should
okay.
we get that checked?
Well, I mean, it could be, so you've got a dog, obviously, who's got chronic skin allergies, right? So she sounds like my dog. So my dog takes both the Apoquel and the Cytopoint injections to try to manage her allergic skin disease. So hair loss like that can be a couple different things. So it certainly can be related to the skin, that, you know, she may have developed a bit of a secondary infection that is contributing. And so if she hasn't been seen by a vet recently, like if you were getting the injections just with one of the nurses at the hospital, it might be worthwhile checking in with them. Have you got her flea and tick prevention up to date? Is she, like, we want to make sure that she's really not overdue for flea tick prevention at all?
No, she has all of those, the monthly, and we use the proper wash, like the melamine.
Okay, Meliceb, So the other thing that, because she's an older dog, we do see hypothyroid disease. So that's basically where the thyroid gland becomes underactive, and that can also contribute to hair loss in dogs, particularly if the hair, you know, they're losing hair and the skin underneath is sort of a bit more darkly pigmented. That sometimes is an indication of hypothyroidism. I think if it's something that's new to her, it would probably be worthwhile getting checked out. And you can certainly do things like, you know, making sure that you've given her a few good cycles through a Meliceb bath, things like that. Because dermatitis, like infection in the skin, will certainly cause some hair to come out sometimes in some patients as well. So, you know, giving her, like, spend a week and do, or a week of 10 days and do a Meliceb bath every second or third day, just to see if you do that for three treatments in a row, is that enough that you start to get the fur growing back? But if not, I definitely would get her checked out by your vet, because they may want to do a blood test, or they may find that she's got more of a systemic infection there, that sort of thing. Yeah. The other thing is making sure that she hasn't had a significant weight gain and that her monthly flea prevention is still within, like she still fits in that weight range, because that occasionally happens where a dog will climb a couple kilos out of their weight bracket and then all of a sudden their flea prevention isn't sufficient anymore.
Oh, actually, yeah, the only thing they did do, they gave me the bigger flea one. She's only 30 kilos.
Yeah.
So normally she was on the medium size one. They did give me the large one, which she did have.
Yeah, well, that's okay then.
I don't know whether that could have.
That's okay. Yeah, it's only if she was being underdosed. Overdosed isn't a problem. Those new drugs are very safe. But underdosing, because flea allergy dermatitis, the classic presentation of that is a dog who develops a hairless, scabby streak sort of over the back of them and around the tail head. So that's why. But if they've bumped her up a class in her meds, that'll be fine for that. So.
Wonderful.
Okay. And that's quite not uncommon. You know, your dog with the Cytopoint, my dog gets about 3 to 3.5 weeks out of her Cytopoint, and then I have to top her up with the Apoquel to get her through to the 4-week mark to when her next Cytopoint is available.
Yes.
So it's not uncommon, unfortunately.
Okay. Thank you so much.
You're
welcome. Thanks very much, Amy.
Okay.
Thank you. Now, we've been talking about lumps and bumps on dogs and cats and things, but I want to talk about nails.
Nails.
Nails for cats.
For cats.
How often should they be clipped?
Well, so it depends on the cat, okay? So with dogs, we do trim their nails routinely because they tend to just grow and grow and grow, and then the bloodline on the inside can grow and become quite long and uncomfortable for the dog. Cat nails are a little bit different. So cats are quite good at maintaining their own nails. They do a lot of scratching behaviors, things like that. Most of the time when we're clipping cat nails, we're doing it to preserve furniture, and we're doing it for the owner's convenience, I guess. The cats don't really, their nails don't grow the same way as a general rule. They don't sort of overgrow and have problems with them. And cats are quite good at nail maintenance. The exception to that is old cats. So a lot of old cats who maybe are arthritic or they're not moving around very much, their nails, they often lose the ability to retract the nails back. And those nails can often continue to grow. And they can grow around and actually start to stick into the foot pad underneath. And they can get quite infected and painful for the cat. So we would always recommend people, if you've got a cat who's, you know, 10, 12 years or older, to check their nails infrequently. It doesn't have to be every week, but, you know, every few weeks, every month. Check the nails. You can sort of put a little bit of pressure on the top of the toe and extrude the nail out and see, have you still got that nice sort of normal cat nail composition, which is basically you should have a bit of a thick, chunky part and then a sharp, you know, nice sharp point. Because those cats where they start to lose the ability to retract, their nails just become really sort of fat and blunted, and they don't sort of have the normal contours, but they start to grow all the way around there. So if you obviously identify that, we want to get your cat up to the vet so we can trim those nails. They'll often need a little bit of a cleanup and antiseptic if it's gone into the foot pad, and they can be quite painful. But as a general rule, cats, young cats and just sort of regular adult cats, you know, the reason we trim the nails is to sort of preserve our home environment rather than like we do for dogs where they actually need to have the nails shortened. So they're a little bit different.
Right. So if my cat's nails are getting stuck in the screen door, that's not a nail problem, that's just a cat problem.
That's a cat problem, yeah, yeah. That's your cat sort of trying to express his desire to probably be outside, or sometimes they actually like the feel of that, and he may start to, like, actually scratch on your screen door, which I wouldn't recommend letting him do.
No, ours but, is like one of those hard screens. Like,
screens there, yeah. So, which is not to say that you can't trim his nails, and if he's getting her nails, sorry, if she's actually getting stuck in them, then that's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
But it's unlikely that there's an actual overgrowth issue. So
So she'll just take care of it herself, or we'll just leave her in the screen door.
We don't want to do that.
No, we don't want to do that. This is Pet Chat, and we've got Evelisa from Hamilton on the line. How are you going, Evelisa?
Hi, I'm good, thanks.
It's good. You've got an elderly cat that keeps peeing everywhere.
Foxy is 19 and a half years old.
Wow. That's
and he has just this year decided that he pees. He has two cat boxes, but now he's started to pee in corners here, there and everywhere. And I'd like not to have my whole house
smelling
peed
like
on.
Cat pee, yes, yeah.
We put a third cat box upstairs where he usually doesn't go. We used to have two cats, but his sister died 2 years ago, and for some reason he's kind of losing the plot at the moment.
Yeah.
And he pees on the carpets and corners. So
okay, yeah.
I don't know what to do.
It is a tricky thing for an older cat like that. So the first thing I would say is you've done the absolute right thing by adding extra litter boxes. We want to make sure we have a look at those litter boxes too, though, and make sure that he's not having any difficulty getting in and out of them. Some litter boxes that have very high sides or elevated doors can get hard for an older cat to get into. Just the actual sort of mobility can be affected. So making sure that, you know, there's a low-sided litter box, or you can sometimes cut the plastic.
They all have kind of low edges.
Good, yeah. Excellent. Okay. So then the other things that we would talk about would be things like making sure that there's no occult urinary tract infection. Now, you're referring to him as, like, to Soxie as a him. So presumably he's a male. And it's quite uncommon for a male cat to get a urinary tract infection. But it's still possible. And so if you haven't had him checked out by your vet, I would recommend doing that and just making sure that there isn't a UTI there, because that can certainly affect their ability to hang on to their, you know, bladders. And then the other thing that we can see, it's not as common in cats as it is in dogs, but dementia in elderly patients absolutely is a thing. And the lack of house training is certainly a possibility that, you know, we're seeing that, or the loss of you know, what was normally a really well house trained.
He's kind of blind.
Yeah.
We don't think he can see well.
Yeah.
And he does sleep a lot, so he's definitely kind of acting like an elderly cat.
For sure. Like 19 is a really old cat. So, you know, you've done very well to keep him going for this long. And it sounds like he's just having a few issues. So there are a few things that can be tried for dementia. Like if we've ruled out the medical causes of him having urinary issues, then there are a couple things that we can try, some diets and things like that for dementia in cats.
We are using the kidney diet.
Yes, yes.
Yep. Food things.
Yes, because that is important too, because a lot of these guys, their kidneys aren't working very well, so they're actually producing more urine than what they used to, and then they're not as good as hanging on to it. You know, you could try sort of limiting his space, you know, the amount of space he's got in the house a little bit.
And he only gets fed twice a day because he's... Oh, the space.
The space.
That would be difficult. Ooh.
Yeah, okay. It can be hard, right? Because some houses are wide open.
We have a kind of an open house, so we can put him into the laundry, and that's about the only
spot. Yeah, that can be a bit tricky because it might be that he's just not able. You know, he gets himself so far away from the litter tray that by the time he realizes he has to go, he can't get there. But we will occasionally see a cat who starts to urine mark way later in life. You know, they were a de-sexed cat, and then they start to spray urine. Is he spraying on horizontal, like on vertical surfaces, or is he actually just peeing?
No, he just seems to be peeing on carpets and corners.
Yeah.
That's what he likes.
It is tricky, yeah. But I definitely get him checked out for urinary tract infection. And then also make sure that you're using a proper pet odor remover, like pet urine remover, to get rid of those smells. Because even if you feel like you've cleaned it up well with, you know, carpet cleaner and things like that, if we haven't got the enzymatic destruction of the proteins and things that are in his urine, he'll still be able to smell it, and that will pull him back to that.
And that
so
will draw him back onto that space.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so making sure you're using a pet odor remover or pet stain remover for sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks very much for your call, Evelisa. Nice to talk to you.
Thanks. Nice talking to you.
Thank you. This is Pet Chat, and we are going to look at Pet of the Week. And we've got Jester and Emily today.
So we've got Jester, who is a beautiful 3-year-old male cattle dog cross. It says Jester is a very cuddly and friendly boy, loves to play fetch. He loves going for walks and being with his people. It does say that he's unlike most cattle dogs. He doesn't have any real mouthing behaviors, and he's a really gentle soul. So that's a really good thing.
He's very cute.
Because they can be quite, some cattle dogs can be a bit nippy, but it says he's a really gentle soul. So that's really great. His favorite things include sprinting after a tennis ball. These dogs have really high energy requirements. So that's a good way to help them burn off some energy, giving lots of kisses to his favorite people. So if you're looking for, he's 3, so he's nice and young, but he's not a puppy anymore. If you're looking for a nice, energetic young dog, I would have a look at Jester.
Okay, and next we've got Emily.
Little Emily. So Emily is a female de-sexed, short-haired black cat. She's got a lovely, shiny black coat. She is a beautiful little girl. She's got a very gentle personality. She has actually taken on fostered a litter of kittens of her own and helped them to sort of grow and mature to a point where they could be adopted out on their own.
She's got a nurturing personality.
Which is really lovely. She's gentle and would be fine around children, so if you've got kids in the house, that's really good. They do feel like she would be best as an only cat or potentially fine with a cat who's also cat friendly. I think we've talked about that before, that it can be hard to introduce one cat to another. She has not met a dog in care, and they do think that maybe she would prefer to not have another indoor dog around because she might be a little bit nervous about that. But she is looking like a really nice cat. Again, not a kitten, nice and young, plenty of life left ahead of her. She likes to hang out near her people and loves to have some pats. So if you're looking for a nice cat, Emily might be the one for you.
And if you'd like to check out Emily or Jester, just go to 2nurfm.com.au, click on the lifestyle section, and you'll find Pet Chat. And you can click on Pet Chat, and then you'll find our Pets of the Week. Now, we're almost out of time, and so I'll just announce our winner for the $50 pet food voucher. Congratulations to Amy from Maitland. We'll be in touch with your voucher.
Sounds good.
Yeah, that's it for the week.
Thank you
so much, Dr. Kimberly Earle, and
You're welcome. We'll see you
next week on 2NURFM.
Thanks for listening to this podcast from 2NURFM at the University of Newcastle. You'll find them all at 2NURFM.com.